Every major coercive state has used the threat of foreign states to distract the attention of subjects from its own violence. This is a status con game as old as recorded history. Thus, the American rulers try to justify domestic totalitarianism as a defense against communist totalitarianism, even as they aid communist governments in the enslavement of their own people, and even as the communist states in turn exhort their subjects with fear of American imperialism. But when, as in the present case, states are merely quarreling over who shall rule the slaves, it is seldom worthwhile to aid or abet either side. Rather, one should regard both as mortal enemies and develop means of personal defense.
Financial independence, country shopping, van nomadism, security culture, ethical enclaves, crypto anarchy, legal interstices, survivalism. Join your hosts Shane and Kyle as they explore this freedom strategy known as Vonning. You're listening to the Vonning Podcast.
And welcome to the Vonnie Podcast, the podcast making you invulnerable to coercion. I'm Shane and...
I'm Jason.
Since governments are the primary coercers upon individuals, this podcast and everything found on the website is covered by BIPCONT, a no-government license, as well as reuse and modification to anyone, except for governments and the pledgees thereof. You can learn more at BIPCONT.org. So to start off on an extremely positive note, before things get a little dark, I'd like to thank Bryce for becoming a patron on Patreon. We definitely appreciate the support and are glad that you're finding value in Vonu. And there's been a lot of folks like that, even if they're not financially contributing yet. Vonu is gaining in popularity, which I think is just honestly fantastic. So if you are interested in financially supporting us outside of cryptocurrencies, Patreon is a great way to do so. We've got some great rewards for varying levels of support, namely $2 a month. We'll thank you by name on the podcast. $5 a month, a monthly email newsletter from Kyle, further developing the methodology behind what Rio contributed, and applied to our current time period, much like what we're going to do today, as well as the $2 month reward, and then $10 a month, all the previous rewards, and a monthly private Skype audio video call with myself and Kyle on Vonu or subjects relating to it. So I don't know, some pretty interesting rewards there. I'm waiting for somebody to pick up that $5 a month. And then I can put Kyle to work on MailChimp to start that email list. So just visit patreon.com/Vonu. And thanks in advance for your support. That's honestly, incredible, incredible. So welcome back to the podcast, Jason. How are things going, man?
Not too bad, Shane. Not too bad. How are things going with you?
Well, things are good. I had one of the great things about the job I have now is I got all the holidays. Typically, you have to, there's some sort of probationary period where you don't get the holidays right away, but I got the holidays, so I used a floating holiday today, and so I had the day off and, getting paid to do a podcast, actually, so so I think that's pretty interesting, pretty interesting. So, yeah, things are good, work's going good, learning quite a bit, got trained on the JLG aerial lift, so I've been, elevated, in a sense. Running wire and such. So learning more, things are going good there. As far as everything else, things are pretty great. Pretty great. I'm settling into my new house an hour south of where I used to live and getting used to the small room, which it was frustrating. I kept kicking shit, so my toes were a little damaged for the first week or so, because there's like a narrow path to walk through, because I don't have a lot of stuff, but it's a lot of stuff for this room. So getting used to everything, really no... nothing bad. So I think that's pretty great. So yeah.
Woohoo! Floating holidays. Thank you, capitalism.
Oh yeah. So I guess what's new? Is there anything you'd like to discuss? Non-Vonu related before we get rolling.
Well, no, not really. I mean, nothing's really changed. Just still grinding, working day to day, and yeah. Still put my pants on one leg at a time.
Never mind. But yeah, sometimes things are, a similar routine is good. I do like getting into routines occasionally, at least with certain things. So, nothing bad about, things remaining static for a certain period of time.
No, not at all. When you have with my mind is busy all the time. It constantly goes. So having a routine helps me like maintain a lot and helps me get things done that I wouldn't otherwise get done because my mind would be off like a schizophrenic jackrabbit on crack or something, just bouncing all over the place.
Right, right. I can sympathize with that. I certainly can. So I guess there is one thing I'll bring up, and it is Vonnie related, but we did a Q&A episode last week. If you haven't checked that out, make sure to do so. It's vonniepodcast.com/QA1. And thanks again for the fantastic questions. And Pete, one of the guys who asked a bunch of questions there, he's taken a pretty deep interest in Vonnie. He's working his way through. He said he was in season one. He was working his way through season one last time we talked. He's taken a deep interest in the subject and has actually located a bunch of Vonnie publications that are currently sitting at the University of Michigan's Labadie Collection. So to give you some concrete, what we're going to be obtaining here soon, namely 14 editions of Innovator, 9 editions of Free Trade, and those were two of the first publications that Rayo participated in or edited or something along those lines, and Vonnie Life 1971. So Jason, you helped edit that behemoth known as Vonnie Life 1973, and if 1971's edition is anything like that, whoo boy.
I am looking forward to, like, as I said before, Shane, this stuff, man, something about Vonnie, right? When I started helping with Ben with his book, promoting his book, like something about Ben's book just reached out and was like, this is important. You need to help with this. Vonnie's the same way. It reaches out and it's just like it matches my mentality. It matches what I'm thinking, you know, it matches what I want to do. And I look forward to it. I look forward to helping edit whatever you got. I'll edit it all if I have to.
Right on. So I guess I'll go ahead and just preemptively, hey, if you want to help out Jason in editing, feel free. I don't have any that need to be edited right now. If these 24 publications come in, we're going to be busy. We've only done about 10 to 12 right now. So that will be a lot of work. And if you want to help him with editing, reach out to me. And you certainly appreciate that help there. But so I'm going to put a little call out here to our Michigan listeners. I know Josh is one of the folks up there in Michigan. I don't know of any. I can't think of any others off the top of my head. But, I need someone in Michigan to go to the University of Michigan and get these, scan these publications, at the Labadie Collection at the University of Michigan. So if you're interested in helping out, I'll pay you, I pay for this shit, man. I really do. It's worth its weight in gold to me. And, I just want to be able to read those and digitize those for posterity. So, please consider, going, helping us out, going and getting those for us, and I'll digitize them as we've done with all of them in the past. So Michigan folks, please, consider helping us out. And also a big thanks to Pete, for, locating these. I mean, from its very, incarnation, it was kind of a decentralized, open source sort of a search for personal freedom. And it's amazing, honestly amazing, Jason, that, it still hasn't changed today. I mean, you've helped, Pete's helped, Kyle helped. I mean, it's been a bunch of people coming together and, trying to further this this philosophy, further the action behind it, and then also just get these things, available for the public to consume. So I'm really, really positive about, about the development of Vonnie so far and the increasing number of Inuans.
Yes, as I talked about before, as we talked about before, it was just something that you guys just happened to come across, and you just happened to come across it and built from there and built, and a lot of the publications found you, as opposed to you guys going out and finding it, and it's so fantastic to see people, in the quote anarcho community, actively looking for these things and searching these things out and being like, hey, this Vonnie thing, this is important. This is something you guys should check out. Look what I found, right? Let's build this library. Let's get Vonnie up and more information so that we can spread it and get people free, or as free as possible.
Right. Of course. So yeah, very, very, very positive to start at this episode. I'm really, really happy about it. So I guess let's go ahead and move forward here. And, after those positive notes, Yeah, things are going to get quite dark. So, Jason, since we agreed upon this idea for the idea for this episode yesterday, and today's November, or I guess December 8th, I've not looked forward to recording this episode. I just haven't. This is not going to be fun, but I think it's an important discussion to be had. That, and we can certainly tie right into this. And hopefully, you know, hopefully my, I guess my conception of it right now is wrong. And, you know, hopefully it'll be a fun, productive episode. I know it'll be productive, but it's not a fun discussion. So today's podcast is titled The Anti-War Rayo. And the show notes can be found at VonniePodcast.com/14. And I will be dropping a bunch of stuff there, so please make sure to check them out. So, obviously the subject matter will be war, you know, hence the title. I'll begin by telling you about the motivation for the for this episode, and then we'll dive into examples of modern-day controlled schizophrenia involved in this fucking despicable topic. Towards the second half of the episode, we'll read a few quotes from Rayo from the 1960s and 70s, and discuss. So, I must provide a disclaimer. This will probably be a more explicit episode. We are talking about the mass murder of innocents and the complete destruction of societies. I highly doubt most folks that listen to this podcast listen at work without headphones, but if there are any of those out there, you might want to put those bad boys in. You know, I'll just kind of, you know, put forth that, you know, right off the start. So, last thing, this will be kind of be a free flow discussion. I have little idea of how it's going to go. Put together, I guess, kind of a minimal outline before we started recording, just to make sure I, you know, didn't forget to mention some things. So, before we dive in, Jason, have you been looking forward to this episode?
Yes and no. I love the topic. I love putting this information out there, giving people food for thought. But it is a very emotional issue, and it will rustle Jimmy's.
Yeah, to say the least. And, you know, it probably wouldn't have been wise to, like, open up, and this wouldn't have been the way we did it anyways, but, I mean, obviously it isn't the way that we did it, but this would have been a really bad episode to, you know, start out the Volney podcast with, because... Yeah, I guess the point is that, you know, people who will disagree with kind of our thesis, or I guess kind of our thesis and kind of the conclusions we come to, and also the conclusions that Rayo came to, you know, I think the folks that would disagree are already kind of weeded out. So kind of a natural vetting process throughout this podcast. So let's start with a discussion on modern-day controlled schizophrenia, and we've already talked about this, but for the new listeners who haven't gone back and, you know, checked out those previous episodes, let's provide a definition for controlled schizophrenia. It is a mental state of an opportunistic citizen serf within the servile society who practices doublethink, yet who still acts in his own best interest. Political crusaders are but just one example of this in action. And Jason, you in pre-show, you said, I think we should, there was one time Rayo used the term controlled schizophrenia, and that's how Kyle and I kind of, I guess, extrapolated that out to, you know, other things, and you kind of, you know, knew when he was talking about the subject, but he only mentioned this term once, so Jason, you thought this would be a good idea to bring up as far as context, right?
Yes, absolutely. This is from the first book. This is from Vaughn and the Search for Personal Freedom, page 17 and 18, and Rayo says... if satisfaction could be plotted with respect to freedom for a large number of people, I think the graph would have a low peak of relative satisfaction around 5 to 10% freedom, a higher peak around 90 to 95% freedom, and a wide depression in between. The lower maximum is exemplified in contemporary society by many a successful middle American. He lives conveniently – but takes advantage of some of the easier, more obvious loopholes. He pays income taxes but hires a tax accountant to maximize deductions. He registers for the draft but goes to college in hopes of being made a technician instead of a target. His mental state is one of controlled schizophrenia. He believes most of the status myths in which he is indoctrinated yet maintains a modicum of skepticism. He goes to church or at least accepts the standard, their standard of morality, but is not above having a drink at a nude bar. He is largely rational in his work, but keeps his rationality compartmented. He does not, dares not, critically examine his life as a whole. Although self-maintained schizophrenia leads to unhealthy and unhappy complications. On the whole, the opportunistic serf may have it better than his more consistent, more gullible, less self-motivated brother who is drafted and becomes a target, and a paraplegic rotting in a VA hospital struggling along in a low-paying, high-tax job with a load of installment debts.
So, Rhea was kind of, comparing the, kind of the low degrees of freedom versus the high degrees of freedom. And then coming to the conclusion that the large majority of the states of all society is very much, more or less enslaved. So then he gives that example of controlled schizophrenia, just to reiterate. And as we mentioned in TVP episode number 6, VonniePodcast.com/6, if you want an in-depth discussion on the subject, the state of servile society exists because of controlled schizophrenia. It really does. Without controlled schizophrenia, there would be no servile society. Because it comes down to whether we're talking about the left or the right, there are certain, things that, each of those sides is right on, right? The right, maybe kind of the more free market oriented ones, the less fascistic, they do, believe in the efficacy of free markets, minus a couple of, minus their, their pet things like defense and police. And the left, when there's a Republican office, they are some of them are anti-war, which I think is great. But again, the controlled schizophrenia, where if it's Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, bombing innocent children's and drone bombing hospitals, it's completely okay, right? That's the controlled schizophrenia there. Whereas when you have a philosophy, whether it's Vani or anarchism, that's based upon a foundation. Foundational principles, and you apply those to your entire life rather than only when it's convenient to you. That's when you take the good in both the left and the right, and you come to this conclusion that's aggression is wrong. So violence should only be used in self defense, and you come to the conclusion that people are individuals, and they have property rights. They own themselves. Again, instead of, where it's kind of wishy-washy, depending upon who's depending upon the political ruler in office and depending upon, what one's personal preferences are. So anything there before I kind of set up the context?
No, I think the context will take care of whatever I have to say. And this is something so many people have issues with in today's society, and I see it all over Facebook. Like I am pretty active on Facebook. I run several pages. I talk to a lot of people, and this is everywhere. The controlled schizophrenia, cognitive dissonance. It's also called. There's a lot of blanket terms that cover this idea of having two different opinions on a subject.
Contradictory
opinions on a subject, and it's everywhere. It's like a mental disease that people have.
Yes, schizophrenia being a mental disorder, controlled schizophrenia. If the psychologists were going to be we're not statist and we're going to be accurate, this controlled schizophrenia. I do think it is a mental illness. I really do. All right, so let's go ahead and set this up here. So what kind of gave me the idea and the motivation for this podcast? Well, I've been binge listening to Scott Horton for the past week, and I've noticed that I can only study the subject of mass murder, war, for short spurts of time. I get so frustrated and pissed off by the despicableness of war, the loss of innocent life, the fact that my tax dollars are funding this bullshit, and also I post about what I'm researching on Fascist Book Twitter, and it definitely comes out in podcasts. So this most personal reason is that it brings out the neocons in my life. Those who could be considered big L libertarians on most any other subject. But when it comes to war, they might as well be John McCain. So yeah, there was one instance in particular that gave me, the idea and motivation for this episode. And it was, back to Scott Horton. I was listening to him on Thaddeus Russell's Unregistered Podcast. And Scott said this, quote, "A young kid once asked me, man, I don't understand how they could have nuked Japan. They literally dropped atomic bombs on two cities." That was a 7-year-old. Then I said, "Have you ever kicked over an ant pile? That's basically the mindset. That's the ideology or the conception of who the enemy is, that their lives are meaningless. You can kill as many fire ants as you want all day long, and nobody minds." End quote. And I actually commissioned Jason here to, make a meme for that, and certainly appreciate that. But it's doing quite well on the pages. So that that's all good. A good quote, kind of explaining the mindset. And I wasn't surprised, but. I'm not sure if you saw the comments. The guy deleted his comment and blocked the LUA Facebook page before I could take a screenshot of it. Coward. But I probably a few different people came in expressing the same mindset. One of those was actually pretty close to me, and it was really disappointing, although not really surprising. You know, he gets his, you know, since the subject was, you know, atomic bombs on Japan, you know, he got his information on the subject from Bill O'Reilly's book on the subject, you know, that infamous neocon. So it's no surprise that, you know, Christian conservatives have to find a way to justify an act like that, right? Because certainly, you know, I don't know, I'm not religious at all, but, you know, from what I know about Jesus, he was very much kind of a pacifist, right? you know, love your neighbor. Well, how much love is that showing your neighbor if you drop atomic bombs on them, right? So I can definitely understand why they would need to kind of foment this you know, moral justification so that, you know, they can still believe that they're going to go to heaven. But so this was the towards the end of, you know, two extremely long comments by this person that was close to me. I'm going to protect the guilty here. I shouldn't, but I'm going to. He said, this was at the end of it. So he said, quote, "I for one am damn glad that they dropped two nukes on the vast majority of the Japanese people who didn't die. And the people who didn't die should be glad we only dropped two." End quote. So.
Yeah.
It was a purely emotional argument. Without revealing who it is, I can't, you know, provide those intimate details. But if you want to go find out who it is, just go to facebook.com/ Shane.Radliff and scroll back to that meme and you'll see who it is. But I'm not going to, you know, reveal that here. That's already on the public, right? You know, that's posted on a public Facebook page. So I guess and we'll get into this more. But just and this individual has also said, you know, we'll turn the Middle East into glass. So I mean, it's just really frustrating I always know this, you know, that these people are in my life, and I dislike it vehemently. But you know, when I'm studying these subjects and, you know, I'm posting about it, this is the sort of shit that I get, you know, that I get brought into. I don't understand how Scott can do this, you know, 24/7. It's frustrating, man. It really, really is. When you have someone who they aren't really close to, you know, actual libertarianism or anarchism. They aren't really close to that. But when you can have conversations with an individual who, you know, if you're talking about, you know, free markets or kind of, you know, war, even the war on drugs, and you guys can kind of, you know, come to a really good agreement and, you know, okay, so like you appreciate the property rights of these individuals. Cool. Fantastic. But then you get to a subject like this and they lose their fucking minds.
Yeah, it's blind, like, in terms of this, right, in terms of what the nukes and whatnot, it's blind nationalism, right? I mean, these people, USA, 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 you know, nuke the Middle East, fuck them all, you know, let God sort them out.
Like, that's such a backwards statement. Of real, oh my gosh, let God sort it out.
It's such a terrible statement, and it's such a strong propaganda line that it took off, and it's I see it everywhere. I do see it everywhere, and these people, they don't see the people in the Middle East just as the people. They didn't see the people in Japan as people, right? They saw them under this title, right? They were Japanese, right? Or they're Arabic, or they're Iraqi, or they're a Muslim,
or they're Christian. Yeah, people of brown color. Yeah.
Yes.
There's actually a pretty large Christian population there in the Middle East. And this is what's – sorry to cut you off there, but I want to mention this before I forget. In all of those comments I saw, you know, that were in response to Scott's, you know, quote, it was always this kind of, you know, moral high ground, this kind of savior complex where, you know, what's happening in those countries, you know, women and children are being, you know, raped and, you know, enslaved and all of these terrible things. So you're saying you don't want us to go help them? And I guess the first thing, I don't want to pay for it. You know, I don't want to be stolen from in order to pay for that. You know, if there's like a voluntary militia or something that's going to go out and do this, and they, you know, are requesting donations, you know, maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. I don't know. There'd be a lot of factors I have to look into. But the other thing too, it's you know, kind of this, we have to save the women and children. Well, simultaneously, in multiple countries, you know, Western foreign policies murdering thousands upon, you know, hundreds of thousands of innocent women and children. So it's not so when they bring that argument up, it's very important to, like, if you're an anarchist and you say you're anti-war and they're trying to say, well, you're just a piece of shit, you don't want to go help these people, you just know that that's the front for their actual, you know, goals, which, I mean, you know, pushing, you know, Western culture, I would say, is one. I would also say that you know, kind of back to the comment that she made, they don't view these people as human beings. You know, they're just the inbred muzzies. You know, as kind of the racial slur, I guess the slur that is you know, put forth by a lot of people on the right. So it's also just kind of, you know, eliminating the so-called enemy, or eliminating someone who doesn't, you know, align with, I guess, Western preferences. And there's also the idea of pushing Western culture around the world, which I think is just a terrible idea overall. I mean, I'm sure you've heard of a lot of folks on the right, you know, talk about how great Western culture is and how, you know, these immigrants are going to destroy it. Well, I don't think Western culture is all that great, right? It's not very much different from most other countries. The foundational things are there, you know, the violation of the person property rights, you know, ad infinitum from the very beginning, you know, taxation, things of that nature. I mean, the propaganda, the nationalism, the kind of the superiority complex that kind of was associated with nationalism. I mean, there's not a whole lot different with, you know, America versus, you know, most other countries. Oh, or I guess the West generally. I guess maybe the only difference is, it's not really a difference, it's just progression on a scale, is that, you know, it's just not as fascistic or socialistic as some other countries, right? So there's really not a whole lot different from America versus other countries. And I know folks on the right, well, why don't you just you know, go move there and you know, find out for yourself. Well, you know,
I can't freaking move there because they're bombing Somalia right now.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I think that's important too. Another reason, you know, spreading Western culture around the world, which I think is a bad idea. And actually, in one of the episodes I was listening to, you know, on Thaddeus Russell's podcast, and this is something Thad brought up, was that, you know, a lot of people in the West would probably be surprised that, you know, the Middle Eastern countries are already, you know, largely adopting kind of the Western culture as far as like media and things. Thad made the comment, you know, I don't remember what country it was, but. You know, the majority of this country is, you know, people that are 35 and under, and they're already kind of inundated with Western culture and Western media. So they aren't thinking about the Quran. They aren't thinking about, you know, their nationalism. They're, you know, just living their lives, as a lot of people here in America are, with maybe the little flare-ups of, you know, some sort of political positions. But predominantly, it's very much like the West already, except that, you know, the West isn't being, you know, bombed into oblivion because, you know, well, the West is doing the bombing. So I guess I'll turn it over to you. Just I guess actually first, I meant to get to this earlier. But you actually kind of started out as a neocon, right? So why don't you tell us a little bit about that, and also kind of tell us about how you kind of came out of that mindset. That I would assume that it was similar to what Scott you know, expressed in that quote.
Yes, I was a neocon. I was one of those bomb them all, turn the Middle East into glass, let God sort them out type of neocons. And what really helped me was my brother. My brother Nick. He was in the Army, did several tours, or did, I think, three tours in Iraq, survived a couple of IED blasts, has some injuries. Just talking to him and listening to his stories and listening to his perspective on why we were there and what we were doing, or I'm sorry, what they were doing and why they were there. I wasn't there, so I can't say we. And he knew it. Like, he knew that what the U.S. military was doing there in Iraq was bullshit. Like, he admitted it to me. He said it's bullshit, blah, 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 blah. But he defended it. He defended being there because, and I quote him, quote, "We did some good things." And that, as we talked, as we'll get into a little bit more, that is a controlled schizophrenia. Like, we were there for the wrong reasons, but we did some good things, so it's okay that we were there.
Was he ever specific about, you know, quote, good things, end quote?
I'm not going to relay too many of his stories on here.
Sure.
Those are his stories, and he could tell them if he wants. But talking to him and talking to other people that were in the military, like my good friend Dierica Klaus, she's an admin on my page and one of my and fam, one of my favorite people in the world. She was in the Navy. She was had some things over there, and talking to these people, like getting a real perspective on what was going on, as opposed to media perspective, the government perspective, the propaganda that they try to ram down our throats. Like getting the real perspective from the people that were there. That was a big game changer for me. And then learning to apply the basic principles of voluntarism, of self-ownership, of property rights, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Applying that to war, applying that to government, which in turn applied more to war. It just I peeled away the layers of propaganda one at a time, one at a time, one at a time, until there was no more pro-war, pro-government. I wasn't feeling the weight of the propaganda and the indoctrination anymore.
Right. So I guess one question that came up, so it was personal interactions with people predominantly, it seems, but was there any research into the history of Western foreign policy that kind of led you to these conclusions, or was it pretty much entirely just learning from people firsthand what it was like over there, what was done, etc.?
No, the people were a big part, talking to those people, but then I read like Smedley Butler's book,
War is a Racket, right?
Yeah, War is a Racket by Smedley Butler, and then talking to other people, reading like I can't remember like 99% of the stuff I read, but I read a lot. Smedley Butler was a big piece of it. I actually have a PDF I sent you earlier. Put that in the show notes for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And just like YouTube videos and talking to people, it's just you can. The internet is fantastic, right? I'm going to go off subject for a second. The internet is fantastic that allows us to connect with people thousands of miles away absolutely instantly. Like you and I right now, we're like 2,000 miles away, I guess, California and Indiana. And I have talked to people through Facebook, through social media, that live in Iraq, that live in Iran, that live in Syria, that live in Ukraine. Like I've talked to those people, and what they say on the ground while they're living there is a hell of a lot different than you will hear coming from the people in the White House, in the news, or the propaganda coming from their government. You know, it's a damn shame that wars are not fought by the people that start them.
Oh, yeah. No, I certainly agree. And I do want to add, I mean, I kind of already laid this out in the beginning, but I want to make sure if any TVP listeners are confused, by why this would be an important subject. Well, obviously, we're discussing the controlled schizophrenia, which is, you know, we already laid that out. But again, you know, Rayo did have some very strong positions. One of the things that he defended against was nuclear war. That was something he was very fearful of, which led him to take certain actions. So this is very much related to Vanu. It very much is. I just wanted to, you know, emphasize that before we really, really get into these things. But anything else there, man?
Yeah, tying this back to Rayo again. War is the ultimate coercive act, right? You are forced to pay for it through taxes. You're forced to give your sons and children to the military if there's a draft or if they volunteer or whatever, to go over and kill other people based on lies, corporate greed, and propaganda. So it very much being anti-war is very much a Vanu position.
Indeed. And that actually just gave me a great idea. And like I said, guys, this is a free flow discussion. I don't really know how it's going to turn out, but that's going to be what we end on, is how to avoid the coercion of war, kind of make like put an action point towards it. So I'm glad you reemphasized that too. So I guess let's get into it. I only put down a couple in my notes. I'm sure we've already kind of discussed some of the contradictory positions, the controlled schizophrenia. So we're going to apply that directly to war here. And I think the first thing I want to bring up, Jason, is that Americans generally don't blame the Germans as an entire people for Hitler's actions, right? Generally speaking. But apparently many, and this is something I just, you know, as I mentioned, you know, before, apparently many Americans blame the entire Japanese population as a whole for Pearl Harbor, and then also recall the internment camps for Japanese Americans, for Americans of Japanese descent, right? So Americans, you know, very much at that time, or maybe just the state, maybe just, a portion of the population did attribute that act to the entire Japanese people as a whole. Furthermore, they blamed the entire Middle East, essentially, for radical Islam, even though there are large Christian populations there that are being killed by Western wars. And that isn't, an excuse or an attempt at justification for, more military intervention. It's got to save the Christians. But then again, kind of the controlled schizophrenia there. Well, if you're trying to protect the Christians, why are you killing them? Maybe on accident. You may be kind of the what's the term? Not unintended casualty, but you know what I'm talking about.
Collateral damage.
Yes, collateral damage. Yep. Christians are being killed there. Collateral damage by Western wars. And then the last kind of example I'll put forth here is they blame all of North Korea for the large pompous dictator. So much so that I'm sure you've seen the talks of starting a nuclear war. So these very impoverished people living under communism, they're falling prey to the same nationalism. As far as we know, I mean, there's not a whole lot that comes out of North Korea, but I'm not really going to say that because there have been a lot of fake videos that have come out on that subject. But I mean, you would think that there'd be kind of that large push for nationalism there too. So I don't know. I guess that's kind of a thing too. Is that blaming the entire population for actions by a state? And I have more on this subject here, but let me go forward just a little bit. So to further reiterate the controlled schizophrenia in this example, let's go back to the atomic wars in Japan. The justification for them was the attack on Pearl Harbor. And this is an important point here, guys. That was an attack by the Japanese military upon the U.S. military, right? So since that attack happens, all of the Japanese are to blame, even though 99% of the citizenry likely had no idea that was going to happen, right, that attack. And therefore, the A-bombs are morally permissible. So, and as I said before, I saw multiple justifications exactly like that. That since the Japanese did Pearl Harbor, since the Japanese military did that, therefore, all of the Japanese are, morally culpable, and therefore, the atomic bombs were justified. So it's just such a really bad argument. It really, really is, right?
Yeah, it's only individuals act. Right. That's a fact. Only individuals act. The same mentality that blames all Japanese for Pearl Harbor is the same one that says all gun owners are this. Right. Or all.
And that pisses off gun owners.
And
right?
that pisses off gun owners like crazy. But then they turn around and apply it to the Japanese to.
Exactly. The same logic, same arguments, the same goddamn justification. Yep.
Yep. It becomes an us versus them mentality. And it's. That is the very basis of controlled schizophrenia when it comes to things like that. It's very, very divisive divisive. It becomes very much a dividing mentality, right? It becomes us versus them. You're either with us or against.
They have to, the states have to have a boogeyman.
Absolutely. The only thing that the state really has is the power of fear, right? If they can get people to fear certain things, then the people will in return beg the government to do something to protect them from what they're fearing, right? The state has to have a boogeyman. Like there is, for a perfect example, there is a new law in Hawaii that makes it illegal for people to be on their phone while crossing the street. Like they do this because of the fear of people being hit by cars.
Yeah.
Darwin right now is banging his head against the wall going, why didn't they listen to me?
Right. And I'm trying to remember there's a principle that Kyle and I talked about. The precautionary principle. A lot of laws and even the preemptive so-called preemptive strikes and wars. The precautionary principle has been expanded, very, very far. We're fearful that this may happen, so we need to do something or kind of something along those lines. And that does tie into war, too. We're fearful of Iran, building nuclear weapons. We're fearful that, North Korea might, nuke California. We're fearful of all of these things. So we need to, take the first step in preventing that, even though no one knows if that's going to actually happen. I'm not really fearful of war myself. But I don't know. I mean, it's it's just a precautionary principle expanded, you know, drastically, and you know, a lot of different ways on a lot of different you know, state pursuits. So I guess one more example here, to go on, going along the same lines that you had, you know, the right's very fearful of, you know, them muzzies, as they call them, as kind of a derogatory slur. But that's the same justification used by those radical religious folks, you know, as, you know, as the right calls them, you know, them muzzies. So the U.S. military, so this is kind of the rationale behind, you know, so-called radical religious folks, is that the U.S. military did this to our country, people, religion, whatever the issue they have with it is, and therefore we're going to attack those who absolutely had nothing to do with the events that transpired, you know, i.e. civilians. So in other words, every American is to blame for the use of, say, depleted uranium rounds in Iraq. So, I mean, do you think that law, that kind of kind of explanation is correct there?
Absolutely, Shane. I think that is absolutely correct, and we should all get down on our knees and beg forgiveness from the citizens of Iraq for what some grunt did 25 years ago. That totally makes sense to me. like we're told all the time. Like, the government tells us all the time, well, not all cops are bad. Right. Not all politicians are corrupt. Right. That's what we're told. Right. That's the propaganda that we're fed. Not all gun owners are bad. We turn around and say all Muslims are bad. Right. That all Jews are bad, or all North Koreans are bad. All it's just it goes on and on and on. And a person can say not all gun owners are bad when referencing Las Vegas, the Las Vegas shooting, and then flip it around and say we should bomb North Korea.
Or in that same example, you know, not all gun owners are bad. And then I don't know if this is actually true or not. I stopped following up on it. But apparently there was, that guy was recruited by ISIS or something. And he was actually recently converted Muslim. So not all gun owners are bad. But again, more, you know, I guess more arguments that all Muslims are bad. So it's out of one side of their mouth, it's kind of, well, think of the individual. And out of the other side of their mouth, it's, you know, kind of that collectivist kind of mentality. So it's super obvious. It really is. It's just controlled. It's controlled schizophrenia, right? Holding contradictory ideas.
Yeah, it's,
or, you know, principles.
Yeah, the Stephen Paddock converting to ISIS, that was a propaganda piece. But we can apply it to ISIS again with the U.S. government arming the Free Syrian Army. Right. The FSA or whatever it was, the rebels, right? The quote unquote rebels that have pledged allegiance to ISIS. But the U.S.
Yeah. And they're connected to Al-Qaeda, too. Right. I think there's even mainstream media or government controlled media that
John McCain snuck into the country through Turkey and had a meeting with the people.
Right, right. And furthermore, too, you know, remember a few years back whenever there was this actually kind of gave me a little hope back then, you know, maybe a little naive on my part a few years ago, but I'm sure you saw, I think it was with kind of the war in Syria, you know, the military was taking pictures and saying, I didn't join the army to fight for Al-Qaeda or fight for ISIS or whatever it was, right? So like there's the controlled schizophrenia is still there, but at least some folks, you know, kind of, you know, we're attentive of it. I think that's certainly good, but I don't know, man. There's not a lot to be hopeful for when it comes to, you know, the end of war, right? I don't think there's a lot to be hopeful for.
The U.S. government right now, the U.S. government is, quote, at war with Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, right? That's – we have since, you know, October 2001. For the last 16 years, we've been at war with Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in Afghanistan. The same,
simultaneously funding them, right?
Yeah. The same time the U.S. government funded and armed them in Libya to oust Gaddafi and in Egypt to out Mubarak. And we used them in Syria again to help oust what's the guy's name now? The president of Syria, like that they want to get rid of the United States.
Oh, Bashar al-Assad.
Yeah, Bashar al-Assad. Like they're using them in Syria to get rid of Assad, or al-Assad, but they're the enemy but they're using them, and it's
And you'd think, I mean, that's kind of the like that's the most when I found out about it a couple of years back, I mean it wasn't really surprising, but it's just fascinating that you know, so the terrorist group, you know, allegedly, you know, responsible for you know, kind of the worst attack on the worst terrorist attack on in American history, you know, that you know, that military, that government is now supporting them. Like, it's just the ultimate contradiction, the ultimate you know, maybe they really weren't the enemy, you know, all along, right? Maybe they were just the boogeyman. I don't know, but it's just you know, really fascinating the hold that controlled schizophrenia has on these individuals. It's man.
Yes. Charlie Wilson's War. If you guys have seen the movie or know the story, Charlie Wilson's War. In the 1980s, the U.S. government funded a radical branch of Al-Qaeda that later became the Taliban to help defeat and to help keep Russia from invading into Afghanistan. That's the same group that supposedly –
Mujahideen, right?
Yeah. I don't believe the official government story, but that was the same group that supposedly flew the planes into the Twin Towers.
Right. And this was, you know, from that same, and I'll link this in the show notes, and you guys need to listen to it multiple times. And again, I'm not, I've got a lot to learn on, you know, Western foreign policy and foreign policy generally. So, you know, Scott Horton Show, and then also listen to those two episodes, on the Unregistered Podcast where Thad has Scott Horton on. So even in that episode, like, you know, Thaddeus Russell's a historian. And he was talking. He's like, you know, a lot of people say like, well, you can't blame everything on America. And Thad was like, well, looking back through history, literally all of the terrible things happening in the world, you know, the West has been involved in most of it, and they've developed the situation that we currently face today. So I like even, you know, Thaddy is being kind of the, I mean the he's kind of the he's a historian. He's a historical expert on war, and Scott's more so kind of, you know, I don't know a specific year, maybe 1980s and on or thereabouts, with still a lot of knowledge on those previous ones. But even that is like, you know, I'm researching my book. I have been for 6 years, my next book, and everything I come into, it's just America's at fault for all of it. He's like, it's an unfortunate conclusion to come to, because, you know, that's making that argument to someone on the right or something along those lines, or someone who believes in America. you know, they obviously vehemently disagree. You know, they'll pick one or two things that, okay, you know, we probably shouldn't have done that. I understand that. But now that that's happened, you know, we need to continue doing this or whatever it is, right? They'll kind of, you know, compromise on a couple of things. But generally speaking, it's, America's not blamed for all of this.
America's not to blame for America's involvement in the Middle East.
Basically, yeah. So I guess, did you have, I've got pretty much one more that I have in the outline here, but are there any other, I guess, blatant instances of controlled schizophrenia, you know, with war that you like to bring up?
When it comes to war, I want to reiterate the blind nationalism, real quick, if I can.
Absolutely not. Yeah, go ahead.
The belief and taking pride in something as arbitrary as being born within a certain set of arbitrary coercive lines. That's what it is. You are taking pride in being American because you happen to be born in this geographical location, and that somehow makes you morally superior.
Better than other people.
That makes you morally superior to someone born in a different geographical location. Just think about that for a minute. Think about that.
It's like being born is like when you turn on a video game, and when you turn on Skyrim, yeah, and you kind of choose your I think it's Skyrim. Yeah, Skyrim, and you choose your character.
Uh-huh.
Like, you choose what breed you're going to be. It's kind of like it's not like that, guys. You don't like, there's not like a pre-life screen where you say, you know, America's pretty great, I'm going to choose that. Y'all be pretty happy about that choice. That doesn't exist.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist.
think about it for a second. Like, we can break this down like let's break this down. Like, being it's the same mentality that being born here in California makes me morally superior to Shane in Indiana. Just think of
Illinois, but
Illinois. Like we could even like you could even go further than that. Like being born in Des Moines makes you better than being born in Chicago. That's the blind nationalism. Like I am better because I was born on this side of the street than on that side of the street. That's the basis of national. That's what it really comes down to, is being born within a geographical region somehow makes you morally superior to someone born in a different geographical location. Like that's the basis of nationalism. That's what people adamantly defend when they stand up and chant USA, USA, USA at a ball game. That's what they are doing when they advocate for turning the Middle East into glass or bombing North Korea or defend dropping nukes on Pearl Harbor. That's what you are defending, being born on the different side of the street.
Right. And I've seen, commercials for this, but it seems that the biggest celebration of nationalism is coming up, the Olympics, right? So I think that's kind of interesting there. You're like, that's directly, more in the athletic form, but, directly competing about, what nation is better, right? So I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Goodness, yeah. The Olympics, like, The Olympics is like the porn of nationalism. Like you look up the medal counts right in the morning and you're like, oh, the USA has 31 gold medals and Russia only has 29. And then you like you get a freedom boner because you live under this flag instead of that flag.
Yeah. And what role did you play in that, athlete, winning that? None at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I guess since we brought up the Olympics, another controlled schizophrenic point is that, the celebration of nationalism. I'm not sure if you've seen the article. This would have been a couple of years back, but it was I think it might have been by Reason or Fee, where they looked at like the 15 different Olympic hosting locations, and like they build these fantastic beautiful stadiums and things like that to actually hold these, and after the Olympics are done there. There's no further use for those buildings. So like you look at these kind of old historical sites, these old Olympic sites, and they're just kind of deteriorating. So it's okay. So you're okay with so Americans generally are okay with, this mass, like when it's hosted here, they're okay with this drastic, probably it would require an increase in taxes, I'd imagine, at least in some form, where, they have to build these billion dollar, stadiums to host this. And then after that's done, all that money is just wasted, right? So kind of a little off topic there, but still on the nationalism thing. But there's controlled schizophrenia everywhere. If you name an example or name a subject, you can easily point to at least a handful of examples of controlled schizophrenia.
I want to jump back on that last point. We talked about stadiums. Go look up what Brazil did and run up to the last World Cup. Billions and billions of dollars spent on stadiums. They literally drove bulldozers through an entire town, destroyed hundreds of people's homes, made thousands of people homeless so that they could build a soccer stadium and use it for like 3 weeks.
Right. And another controlled schizophrenic moment on the left. They bitch about corporations all fucking day. And do you ever hear them complaining about the absurd waste when it comes to, these Olympic events? Nope. Because nationalism, right?
Yeah. They could complain about corporations all day long unless the corporation is doing something they want, such as Facebook.
Right.
Such as Google. Like they adamantly defend Apple, Google, Facebook because they are left-leaning corporations that are censoring right-wing media.
Hey, another controlled schizophrenic moment here too. Well, I've seen many leftists bitch about the fact that Google and Apple don't pay taxes, but then they love the platform because it's suppresses right free speech from the right. So
corporations are bad, and I'm going to tweet that from my iPhone.
It's pretty absurd. It's pretty absurd. So I want to mention one more example here directly relating to war, and that's the disconnect between the desired results, the political goals, and the outcomes. So in short, you know, just real briefly, when will you fucking neocons learn? To put it in the words of Harry Brown, the day after 9/11, and he was berated for this article. And please ignore the collective movementist terminology here, but he said, quote, "Our foreign policy has been insane for decades. It was only a matter of time until Americans would have to suffer personally for it. It is a terrible tragedy of life that the innocent so often have to suffer for the sins of the guilty. When will we learn that we can't allow our politicians to bully the world without someone bullying back eventually?" Ellipses. "When will we learn that violence always begets violence?" End quote. So, yeah, man, it's another controlled schizophrenic moment there. If you believe in blowback theory, and not going into conspiracies here, but blowback theory, yeah, sure. You know, all of the terrible foreign policy that happened from like the 1980s up into 2001. America and the West generally was the Western governments were responsible for that, right? So that event happened, and what was the result? Well, obviously the loss of freedom, but, kind of the these 16-year-long wars, the war on terror that was loosely defined to begin with, that will probably never have an end. It was the ultimate, justification for permanent military intervention into the Middle East. Western governments are responsible. And, let the Western governments continue doing all of these really atrocious things that will lead to more events, more attacks like this. So, I guess I'll turn it over to you there for a moment here.
I am a huge believer in blowback, right? I believe in ardent self-defense and ardent retribution. The U.S. foreign policies of the time were hugely intrusive. Not just the 20 years leading up to 9/11, not just the 25, not just the 100 years leading up to 9/11.
I want to mention Lawrence. For a college assignment, they wanted me to watch Lawrence of Arabia, and I was really happy that they did, because that was kind of when they initially divided up all the Middle Eastern countries into these things, and it caused a lot of conflict. They put Sunnis and Shiites in within the same borders, and what the hell did they think was going to happen? But go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna get to that.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. It's good you brought it up, because it's okay. But the U.S. foreign policies leading up to 9/11, the 20, 25 years before, the 50 years before it, right? The Cold War before that. And it's just blowback is very real. Like to quote somebody else, I don't remember who the quote is, blah, blah, blah. But the quote is, those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it. And this is not a recent revelation of mine or of other people. When you do the same things over and over and over and over and over and expect different results, it is the definition of insanity. The U.S. government's foreign policy is doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over, and again, expecting different results. The U.S. military intervention in Cuba, in Mexico, in Iraq, Iran, in Syria, in Yemen, in Russia, in Ukraine, in South America with Chile, right? And it's Chile in 1970 or Argentina in 1973, the military flew planes into government buildings. Just saying. No mm-hmm. tinfoil hat moment there. Just saying. And then all the way up to 9/11, if you believe the government's official story, you can only mess with somebody so much before they hit you back, right? Every bully in the world knows this, right? A bully will pick on somebody. Eventually that somebody is going to fight back. That's what happened if you believe the government's official story. I'm not going to go into Operation Northwoods and all that. This isn't the place for that. But my kids will be 18 in February. They were in diapers on 9/11. they have lived with war in Afghanistan their entire life. They have lived with the NSA, the TSA, the DHS, the increased militarization of police. They have never had a phone call that was not recorded by the federal government. They have never sent a text that was not read. They have never made a social media post that was not recorded, analyzed, and read by the federal government. Just – and that right there, that infuriates me far more than anything else that our federal government is doing.
Right. I can certainly imagine. That's a good point there, that now with this newest generation coming up, this is all they've known. You know, this sort of world is all that they've known. This is normal to them. The large majority of them will never step out of that box and look back in history to see how things really were. And obviously the government schools, the government indoctrination camps aren't going to tell them the truth about these things. So, I mean, I don't see how, you know, these things couldn't get a lot worse. That's, you know, World War III, you know, I'm not a fearmonger or anything like that. But, you know, is it possible that, you know, things could continue to escalate? Sure, of course, we're dealing with, I guess, yeah, I'll use we here. You know, we're dealing with these psychopathic tyrants, who are on a death march, to, you know, pretty much destroy everything and everyone, right? So is it feasible? Sure. But, to get back to this point real quick, and that was a little bit of a digression, but, you know, I appreciate it. It goes right along with it. But so the disconnect between the desired results, political goals, and the outcomes. So to flesh this out a little bit more after that Harriet Brown quote is that the stated goals put forth by the state in press releases, the goals of Americans generally, i.e. to keep us safe at home, are never achieved in U.S. foreign policy. You know, law of unintended consequences and things like that. Rather, again, blowback often occurs. The situation in the Middle East only becomes more volatile. And, you know, I imagine we'll see a lot more, you know, people who are frustrated as all hell about what's been going on in their country. You know, they were bombed to oblivion, so they, you know, they rebuild. You know, they rebuild. They, you know, they rebuilded their shit. You know, they mourn the loss of their son, daughter, father, mother, etc. And, you know, they're trying to get back to their normal lives. And what happens? It happens again. And, you know, I'm not an advocate of violence, but, I mean, from an understanding kind of, not a sympathetic point of view, but you can understand why they take these actions, right? You know, I guess another way to put it is put yourself in the shoes of those. What if the playing field was reversed and the Middle East was the one, you know, unleashing war upon all of the United States? Do you think people would just sit down and do nothing?
Nope.
I don't think so.
Go watch Red Dawn. Go watch Red Dawn and tell me that you would not just kick back and let them walk in and take over and make you and force you to live under their rule.
Yes, you cannot be surprised when the person being bullied says "fuck this, fuck you, I'm not taking it anymore," right? I'm not endorsing violence. I'm just saying you can't just say, "Well, this is all because they hate our freedoms. This is all because they're just radical Islamists." You know, these are just people who have these are not even human beings. They're just, you know, violent. Violent psychopaths who are trying to, you know, enslave the world or whatever kind of the reasoning is. You know where I'm going with that. But so yeah, the Middle East only becomes more volatile, and a refugee problem arises in Europe. You know, that's been you know, discussed quite often. Well, where do the majority of those folks come from? Well, I would say that a large majority of those folks, they had their, you know, cities destroyed multiple times, maybe just once. They lost family members, and they said, you know, this is terrible. You know, this is we've got military control over our city. I'm leaving, right? I'm leaving to somewhere where I might have a chance to, you know, start a better life, right? So they flee to Europe or wherever, and you have these problems that, again, you can blame Western foreign policy for these problems. And what's kind of backwards is that the folks and kind of the anarchist alt-right, you know, they should know better, right? They should know that the last thing that would help the situation is, you know, more, you know, Western intervention into these countries and more government intervention more generally. So I guess the only non-stated goal that is achieved for the American right is that these so-called inbred Middle Eastern rats are being killed. We mentioned the phrases before, turn the Middle East into glass. You know, those sorts of things. I mean, the mindset that Scott referred to in his quote, it's his conception of the enemy that they are not humans. The ant pile reference, you can cook over an ant pile and nobody cares. So I don't know, man, that was a little bit of a rant, but man, it's so frustrating. It pisses me off to no end. Not only the divorce of critical thinking and the understanding of history, but but those two things are leading to so much innocent life lost. To bring it back here to America, so-called America, I mean, what freedoms, exist anymore? None unless you participate in the black and gray markets and you pursue vigilance. You can't be free in the state of servile society. I mean, that's why it's called the servile society. So the results of all of these things, whether here or abroad, I mean, they're detrimental, man. It's hard to put into words.
It's very, very, very hard to quantify exactly what is happening in the Middle East with the U.S. military, the corporations, the desired goals, the end game, the controlled schizophrenia of it all. It's very hard to quantify those, what's going on, into just a few words. I would even say it is impossible to sum it up in.
It takes like 13 years of interviews and podcasts like Scott Horton has done, and then even then you're not really even close.
Yeah, it's not easy to put it into simple terms that make it
to really explain how terrible, Western imperialism is.
Yes, yeah, it's very difficult, and you're not gonna get it out of your public school history book, right? History is written by the victors. It's written by the corporations. These are government-approved books written by people on government contracts. You're not going to get a true representation of what the government is really doing from your public history books, from the mainstream media, from the government's official story. If you truly want to know what is really going on, you have to read, you have to research both sides of the issue. The truth is generally somewhere in the middle.
Sure.
But like when you talked about Syria and the immigrants and things like that, like these are the unintended consequences.
Of bombing a fucking region into
oblivion. Yeah, non-tinfoil hat moment, taking my tinfoil hat off and just going with that. These are the unintended consequences of the U.S. foreign intervention, right? The immigrants. When you have literally your entire country, the entire infrastructure of your country, of large regions of the country at least, destroyed by bombs falling from the sky, where are you supposed to go? Are you just supposed to crawl into the rubble like a rat, and try to hide? Or do you try to get away from the destruction? Try to move to a place that has food, water, medical, so your kids can go to
the basic
necessities,
right?
So your kids can get an education, so they can have shoes on their feet instead of walking on the broken glass and rubble. I mean, it was going to happen. Right, it was gonna happen. You cannot have even to go back to Japan and war, Hitler, the World War II, World War I, etc., Vietnam. The people that are not fighting, they move away from the war. Like nobody realistically wants to be involved.
Right. If you live in a bad part of Chicago and crime's increasing drastically,
you're gonna move away.
What are you gonna do if you have a family? Are you gonna leave them in that vulnerable position? No, you're going to move. So for these anti-immigration folks, especially those on the right, build the fucking wall, that sort of shit. If you really, really, don't want people to immigrate here, well, you probably stop destroying their civilizations and their families and their lives. That would be the first logical step, right? If you don't want people to flee where they are, then make it a place where they can actually live and not have to worry about, you know, whether it's military barging into their house and torturing them, or if it's, you know, something, you know, more deadly, such as, you know, dropping a 15-ton bomb on them or something along those
lines. Yeah, and you don't even have to do anything. Just stop doing what you're doing. Just stop dropping bombs, and they'll take care of their own business. Like, you don't have to go in and build schools. You don't have to have the military go in and do, you know, house sweeps for bad guys and to build schools. And
it's a Keynesian economics wet dream.
It absolutely is.
You know, the broken window fallacy. Yeah, and if you look at we did an episode on Liberty Under Attack about this at the very beginning of the podcast, but you look at, like, major – not nationwide, but I guess international corporations, you know, that are getting the contracts to rebuild, you know, all of these cities. I mean, all of these things, only for them to be destroyed again. From an economic standpoint, too, I mean, it's just it's detrimental upon an economy. And it's you know, those corporations are being paid by your tax dollars, you know, most of the time, unless, well, they have to be, right? I mean, it's not like the bombed and destroyed, you know, countries or cities have the money to fund these things. Nope. Right, their economy is destroyed it's damaging upon, you know, every you know, person living in this geographical area that's coerced to pay taxes.
Yep, to quote Derek J. Freeman, if Starbucks dropped bombs, I wouldn't go there. Right, that's exactly what it, these aren't corporations dropping bombs, these are US government on a government contract, right? These people are building bombs on a government contract on your tax dollars to drop these bombs in a foreign country for Syria. Like in Syria right now, the whole thing is over a oil pipeline, right? They want a U.S. friendly government.
It was like that a few years ago too. That was why I covered my video, the pipelines that they wanted to build.
Yep, there. They want a U.S. friendly government that will approve a U.S. pipeline instead of a Russian friendly government that wants to approve a Russian pipeline. That's what it is. That's what it is. This is the government paying corporations to make bombs that they can drop on a country for corporate greed. That's your tax dollars, America. Give yourself a hand. Pat yourself on the back. Yay, nationalism.
But it's all for our freedom, though.
Oh, that's totally for.
Nope, it's about the control of people, resources, and you know, money. I mean, that's pretty much what it comes down to. There's no I would implore anyone, and probably no one listening to this podcast, but I implore anyone, you know, out there to point to, you know, one military event or I guess foreign policy decision that actually benefited Americans in general. I'm sure it'd be very easy to go back before that and say, well, actually, if you look back, you know, 20 years, this actually happened. This happened, and this, you know, the win that you're counting there was actually, you know, a situation that, like, you like there's literally not one thing I can think of.
Ending the draft.
Go ahead.
The ending of the draft. That's the only thing that comes to mind.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And that doesn't mean they can't reinstate.
Yeah.
So, and that's what in the first time Scott Horton was on Thad's podcast. I mean, this has been like the last 25 or 30 minutes, I think. But Thad actually, you know, broke down in tears because his son's 16, and he's and Thad's anti-war as they come. And you know, he broke down and said, "I being a historian and having a 16-year-old is awful." And I'm just paraphrasing. He's like, yeah, he's going to have to register for Selective Service. And, you know, knowing what I know, this is – it's scary. You know, I don't have kids, but I completely, you know, I can understand that. And that's kind of what you're going through, too, right?
My kids turn 18 in February. I have twins. I have a boy and a girl. And, yeah, they're going to have to register for the draft, for Selective Service. And, no, they will not be going. They will not be going. We already have plans on that.
Good.
I've already talked to them about that. Their moms talked to them about that. And no, they will. They will not.
Yeah, because World War III isn't out of the question. If it's something this major, like a nuclear war or something along those lines, or another world war without nukes, you know, I've seen pieces about how you know, enlistment to the military has decreased. I think that's great, but if they can't get the sacrificial lambs, enough of them, It's not out of the question that they could reinstate the draft. I mean, it's been brought up a couple of times in the past 5 years.
See, what really gets me is they say that the numbers are down, but they might need to increase the draft in order to get more boots. Right? War has advanced to the point where we're not sending boots on the ground. Right? You don't need boots to fly a drone. Right? You don't need boots to drop bombs. It's a different war. Warfare is different now than when the draft was initiated in the 60s.
True. Yeah.
Or the 50s and 60s. Yeah.
But I understand that. But at the same time, it's the state.
I wouldn't put anything past the state at this point.
No, certainly not. So I guess we're about an hour and 15 minutes into this. Let's go ahead and get to Rayo's quotes on war. And I want to reemphasize that war is, and especially the draft is it's extremely coercive. especially if you're on the receiving end of a bomb, that's extremely coercive, right? That's about as coercive as it gets. So
especially so we'll a bomb you had to pay for.
Exactly. So. Yeah, so we'll go through the quotes by Rayo, and then we'll kind of have a dialogue about how to avoid the coercion of war. And I think Rayo might have an idea or two, but may not be completely applicable. I think one time he brought up a nuclear detector or something like that, which I don't know how effective that would be. But anyways, let's get to Rayo here, and we'll have plenty more to discuss. And again, this was Rayo in the 1960s and 70s, so. Just imagine having so Jason, you and I having these positions back in the 60s and 70s when the Cold War was going on. I mean, holy shit.
Yeah.
And having his philosophical positions on the state too, in the kind of that historical context. Yeah, he was probably scared. And I'm not fearful, but I guess I'm worried might be a better way to put it. But let's get to Rayo here. Just these. I love these quotes. So let's get to him. Quote. Every major coercive state has used the threat of foreign states to distract the attention of subjects from its own violence. This is a sadist con game as old as recorded history. Thus, the American rulers try to justify domestic totalitarianism as a defense against communist totalitarianism, even as they aid communist governments in the enslavement of their own people, and even as the communist states in turn exhort their subjects with fear of American imperialism. But when, as in the present case, states are merely quarreling over who shall rule the slaves, it is seldom worthwhile to aid or abet either side. Rather, one should regard both as mortal enemies and develop means of personal defense. End quote. Yeah, spot on. I can't put it any better myself. He was definitely a wordsmith at times. sometimes he could use an editor, but regardless, I mean, man, to have that realization in the 60s or 70s.
Yes, as we've talked about, Rayo was a very, very, very intelligent man, and philosophically, I think he was ahead of his time. But his words.
Oh, he's ahead of this time too.
Oh yeah, his words are very universal. They apply to pretty much every time.
They're timeless.
Yes, that's the word I was looking for.
Switch the names, dates, and places, and it fits.
Oh yeah.
Man. So let's go ahead and get to this the second one here. Quote, Dr. G and I did not choose our way of life primarily because we expect a nuclear war or other apocalypse within a few years. While we have considered possibilities of various catastrophes in our planning, if nuclear weapons had never been invented, we would probably be living much the same way, perhaps somewhat closer to larger cities. Institutionalized coercion, states, is a long-existing social phenomenon. War is only its most dramatic form of destruction. We are striving to reduce vulnerability to all forms of coercion and maximize all satisfactions, end quote. But, yes, war has always existed. Nation-states or states have always existed, and, along with that comes war. And I agree with them 100%. War is the most dramatic form of destruction. I think that's one reason why it's hard for me to stay on that subject for very long. It's hard.
Yes, it is not a pretty thing at all. And if nuclear weapons had never been invented, we would probably be living much the same way. Yes, because we would be told to fear something else, right?
Okay, so yeah, for context here, Ray was like this was
during the Cold War.
But yeah, so he was saying that, you know, if nuclear weapons had never been invented, him and Roberto would still be, you know, doing the wilderness fauna thing, they presume. They would just live closer to cities. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry, I just wanted to, you know, make sure that was clarified.
Yeah, but we'd be living the same way. Yes, we would be living much the same way because of the mentality that we would have. We would – the governments would have some other boogeyman for us to fear. We would have to – we'd have to learn to fear something else rather than a nuclear weapon. And it could be biological, it could be chemical, there's a thousand other things out there. Nuclear weapons just happen to be a very visual topic that they can really rally the fear porn around.
Oh yeah, and I guess one other thing, and I understand why he was especially back in the 60s and 70s. I mean, they've done, you know, small scale tests of nuclear weapons, but I don't know, man. It's hard to actually think. It's hard to actually, I guess, conceptualize the damage that would do. I mean, there's been a lot of, you know, charts and things like that to show like charts with maps, but I mean, the destruction that would cause. Oh man. Oh man, so I certainly understand that you know, he was fearful of that, but again, to reiterate, one difference between him and your standard preppers and survivalists is that that was just another thing they prepared for. They weren't they didn't just expect nuclear war, build a bug out shelter with some food storage and such, and you know, decide to bug out there when shit hits the fan. So that is the difference here. So yeah, what else you got?
I don't get anything else on that one.
Okay, so this final quote from Rayo. The contemporary state is not only incapable of protecting its citizens from outside aggressors, it has become the biggest aggressor with its endless taxes, conscriptions, and interferences. The state provides justice by mass terror, freedom by mass servitude, and defense by mass murder. End quote. Man, oh man, that's probably one of my favorite quotes by Rayo ever.
That, I'm going to have to meme that one for sure. And
so
and,
good.
So
good. So true.
It's very true. It's very true. I mean, I got two real points on this one. Number one, the police, per the Supreme Court of the United States, have no obligation to protect you, right? The government has no obligation to protect you. This has been ruled over and over and over and over and over. I mean, several times. I mean, Warren versus D.C., 1981, fundamental principle of American law is that government and its agents are under no general duty to provide public services such as police protection to any individual citizen. DeShaney versus Winnebago County Department of Social Services ruled in 1989 that the constitutional duties and protections only exist to certain individuals, such as incarcerated prisoners, involuntarily committed mental patients, and others restrained against their will and therefore unable to protect themselves. And in 2013, New York City, the police had no duty to protect the subway hero who subdued a killer. California, Alameda County, 2011, the police have no obligation to protect you. Justice have no obligation to protect someone. Colorado, 2005. That was a guy that violated a restraining order. How can people still support an entity that has no obligation to support them? Right.
They never really do. They just show up. They show up after the fact, after you're dead. Or they, you know, just, it's just revenue generation scheme. Yeah. It's controlled schizophrenia. Once again, I mean, that's to reiterate a point from earlier. Yeah, I mean, the state is sort of all society. It's full of controlled schizophrenics. It really, really is. And unfortunately, so there's quite a few folks in the libertarian and anarchist community that are suffering from the same mental condition, too. So it's not universal, or I guess it's not, you know, limited to, I guess, the status. But at the same time, you know, everyone who resides in the state of all society, you know, even if they are, you know, philosophically consistent for a time, you know, that controlled schizophrenia is a very, very dangerous thing if you get off your Vonage drugs, right?
Yes. Yeah, the second point I wanted to make on that quote is it has become the biggest aggressor with its endless taxes, conscriptions, and interferences. The only real power that the government, be it city, local, state, or federal, the only real power it has is the power to crack down on what it calls criminals. It cannot give you freedom. It cannot give you anything other than oppression. That's the only power that the government has. It cannot control someone if it does not have a, quote, legal means for which to control them. And you are. That's exactly what you are. If you live within this arbitrary line known as the United States of America, if you are from this, if you're in this geographical location, you are nothing more to them but a commodity that needs to be controlled. There is no duty to protect. There's no duty to protect you. The only power it has is to crack down on you. Okay, that I cannot emphasize this enough. The NSA, the TSA, the DHS, the militarization of police, they are not there to protect you. They are there to monitor you, catalog you, and control you.
Bingo. Bingo. Well said. Well said. And in regards to war, and actually, I'll leave that for I guess, kind of the end point here. But yeah, you know, I couldn't have said it any better myself. And, you know, I just, it's, you know, even just thinking back to, you know, right after I graduated from high school, you know, when I was 17 or 18, even, you know, just looking back to then and trying to figure out how I couldn't, well, I guess that's hard to say because it was only about a year or two after that I started to kind of get into these things. But I don't know. It's just hard to, you know, Ray was certainly far, far ahead of his time. And he realized all of this. And I can certainly understand why he took the actions that he did. Because he tried to become as invulnerable to coercion as possibly could be, and I would say that in large part he was successful. Since the last time we heard from him back in 1974. But anything else on those quotes, or can we kind of get to the, I guess, to the action point here, how to avoid the coercion of war?
On that point, I don't really have anything else. I can't say it more simply than I already said it. I mean, To modernize this, right? Governor Cuomo, New York, released a statement the other day saying that the taxes in the state of New York are high because that's the way the politicians wanted it. If you don't read that, read his article, read what he says. If you can't read that and take away from that the fact that the government is not there to protect you, the government is not there for you, for your benefit, for your service, to give you anything. The government exists to control you. I don't know another way to say that.
They're parasites feeding off the host. And in this instance, the host, all of its freedoms, its financial capacity, all of those things. I mean, are just being you know, sucked away. Yeah. And there's the saying that war is the health of the state, right? So if any of these things ever kind of if people start getting back a little more freedom somehow, or if people start to, produce more and say like the black or gray markets, I mean, war is always there as an option. It's very profitable to the state, you know, controlling the economic resources all over the world. It's very profitable for the Federal Reserve. You said it well, you know, the state's not there to protect you or anything like that. It's there to control you. And I think that's probably a good place to end there. But I guess so let's get to how to avoid the coercion of war. And this was a new addition to the outline here, just this question. So the first thing, you know, practice VANA, you know, to be very general. Whether it's coercion from war or coercion from taxation or theft or anything like that, VANA is a strategy, you know, based upon becoming as invulnerable to any coercion as you possibly can be. So that would kind of be the general answer. What do you think, man?
I keep bringing him up. I keep bringing up Ben Stone and his book Sedition, Version, Sedition, Subversion, and Sabotage, Field Manual Number 1. Ben lays it out very well. Ben lays out the market killing the state very well. But in the meantime, the best way, in my opinion, to avoid the coercion of the state, to avoid the coercion of war, is to, number one, simply not support the state. If you are supporting the state, you are supporting the war. If you are supporting the war, you're supporting the killing of little brown kids and little Asian kids and little black kids, little white kids, Christian kids, Muslim kids, Jewish kids, whatever. You are supporting killing innocent people thousands of miles away based on your blind nationalism and blanket hatred that you have because of the indoctrination and the propaganda pushed upon you by the very entity dropping the bombs on the little kids a thousand miles away. So Vanu is, in my opinion, hands down the number one way to avoid the coercion of the state. It doesn't matter where you live. If you live in the United States, Canada, Mexico, Taiwan, whatever, no matter where you live, if you practice Vanu, you are taking an active participation in avoiding the coercion of the state and avoiding being culpable to a certain degree and these very immoral things that this very immoral entity does. There's no free countries. There's no free countries. There's nowhere that you can go and be free. You can be more free somewhere else, but you're still going to be subject to the coerciveness of the state, to the coerciveness of people that have bad intentions. Yeah.
Right,
so
right. So find a place where you can become as invulnerable to that coercion as you possibly can.
Yes. Sure. Do what you can to be free now. Because you're not going to vote for freedom. Waiting for an economic collapse is useless. Moving to another country, sure, you'll get more free, but you're still not free. I mean, you can move to Liberland, and you're still going to be subjective to a certain level of coercion. And there's no place that you can be totally free in this country or in any country.
Right.
But you can be free and invulnerable to coercion to a certain point by practicing the basic principles, the basic philosophies of Vanu.
Right. And you're certainly correct there. That's and Rayo understood that it was impossible to become completely invulnerable to coercion, even if you're practicing wilderness Vanu, and you're completely self-sufficient, and you don't need anything from the state to serve all society. Private land, obviously, that comes with its own coercive its own coerciveness in its various ways. But if you do it kind of the way Rayo did on mostly so-called national parks, the Siskiyou, National Forest, even if you are completely self-sufficient living in the wilderness Vanu manner, there's still always that risk of coercion from the forest bludge. You can get pretty damn close, but at the same time, this is not a utopian strategy. It is not. And as you heard from those last few quotes, and this was when Rayo was practicing wilderness Vanu, he was very much aware of the coercion that existed. He was very much aware of the capabilities of the state and all of its very immoral property rights destroying aspects. So I think that's kind of a good way to leave it, kind of an advertise on the Vanu podcast, even though you're listening to the Vanu podcast. But Vanu really kind of is the only way. Political crusading, is it going to make you more more invulnerable to the coercion of war? Hell no. I guess any sort of strategy like that is not really going to do a whole lot. Moving to Iraq or Afghanistan, strategically relocating to Afghanistan or Iraq is probably the worst thing you could possibly do. It comes down to learning about Vanu and looking over the strategies that we've discussed so far, and then staying tuned for season 3 when Kyle and I begin to develop these things, and Jason and I, all three of us, I'm hoping, we can kind of tackle season 3 together. But I guess anything else there, man?
Nope. I just want to say practice Vanu, support your local black market, and try to live as free as possible.
Right on, right on. And when it comes to war, I want to emphasize this again. It comes down to the lack of the use of the trivia method, the lack of critical thinking. So, for those of us who, want to be free or want to become more vulnerable to coercion, I think it's still highly valuable to kind of have that philosophical realm too, and that constant self-education on these subjects, specifically war, because if everyone understood, the history of war, I don't think there'd be any war. But again, that's kind of a utopian dream. So certainly, learn about as much as you can. Be educated. The more you know, I guess knowledge is power, right?
No. Applied knowledge is power.
Fair enough. but yeah, learning about the world around you in history can be very, very enlightening. And, as it did with Rayo, it can certainly influence your action. So with that said, this has been the Vonnie Podcast, intermission number 14, the Anti-War Rayo. You can find the show notes at VonniePodcast.com/intermission14. And I think that's about it. Thanks again for becoming a patron, Bryce. And you can help financially support this podcast by visiting VonniePodcast.com/donate, or you can go to become a patron at Patreon.com/Vonnie. Thanks so much, guys. And
peace.
Yeah. Later.